This conference will now be recorded.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another session of Shared Experience.
This conference will now be recorded.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another session of Shared Experiences, where we bring you professionals to share their knowledge and expertise on a given subject matter. Tonight, we're going to be talking about insurance, the different types of insurance. You will have opportunity to learn from two individuals who both own their own agencies. We will do what we normally do is we'll go through a list of questions and we will get their perspectives. And for those who may be watching Shared Expressions for the first time, just want to know that this is where we discuss. We don't debate topics here. We basically give people the opportunity to have a platform just to share their knowledge and experience. Tonight, we bring to you two people who have years of experience in insurance, Mr. Clinton Raines, who's based in Atlanta, and then we also have Elijah Petit, who's based in West Orange, New Jersey. I'm gonna start off by asking Clint. Clint, you know, give us a couple of minutes to introduce yourself and your background.
Okay, well, good evening. My name is Clint Raines. I've been a State Farm agent since 1992. But prior to that, I was a claims adjuster. I started with State Farm in 1986 and got my own agency in 1993. So I've been an agent for about 27 years. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. I met Darren at the United States Naval Academy, where we became very close friends over the years. And he said he was going to start this entrepreneurial new deal and asked me would I participate in furthering my business. So that being said, let's get it on.
All right, Clint. Elijah, tell us something about yourself.
All right. So as you all know, my name is Elijah Petit. I actually own the Ace Insurance Agency located here in West Orange, New Jersey. We've been in business for the insurance side of the business. We've been in business for about 2 years. I've actually been in the financial services industry for a total of 14 years, starting off at a PNC Bank as a banker in the branch, and then that evolved into business banking and financial consultant in the Chase Private Client Division. Over the years as well, before I actually, you know, decided to jump ship and try my hand at entrepreneurship and build out my own financial services business, utilizing the knowledge that I just gained over, you know, the past 14 years.
All right, awesome. Are you gentlemen ready to get this thing going? All right, I'm about to grill you.
Absolutely.
Okay. and again, Mitchell. Shelly, just feel free if you have any questions of your own.
Okay.
All right, so I broke this up into several sections. We're going to first start talking about life insurance and really just looking for your opinion and your expertise that you can share with folks. We pretty much know what the purpose of life insurance, but, you know, someone may ask, you know, as my family is growing and changing, you know, what coverages should I consider, you know, and how do I calculate the appropriate amount of life insurance I should have?
Yeah, that's a very good question. It's a loaded question, because, you know, there isn't really a definitive answer to that question. You know, when you're considering how much life insurance you have to look at a lot of things that take into play. You know, are you a homeowner? Do you have any children? How many children do you have? Does anyone rely on your income, even though you may not have children, rely on your income and how long would it take for them to recover in any unfortunate event that you are no longer with us? So you realistically, me personally, when I'm having that discussion with a client, you know, I'm going over all of these questions and these factors trying to determine how much coverage, you know, how much insurance do you actually need? Because you don't want to under or over insure somebody. If I under insure you, I'm not, you know, we're not reaching the goal. if I overinsure you, you're wasting money on too much insurance. You know, we want to try to hit that sweet spot. But, you know, one of the most important things I tell everybody to look into is how much is your mortgage? How much time do you have left in your mortgage? How many children do you have currently? Do you plan on having any more children? Do you plan on adopting anyone? You know, do you need a living benefit within the policy because you think you're going to have to borrow against the policy at a later date? You know, and we go into factors of, you know, do you want your children to go to college? Or you think they're just going to go to trade school? In addition to that, you know, we also like to ask, inform my, and educate my clients. Let them know the average cost in the United States, according to the Department of Agriculture, it actually costs about $250,000 a year over the lifetime of a child to raise a child. So when realistically, you know, when I'm looking to calculate, and if this is straight insurance, if I'm going to do a calculation based on that, you know, we have to take, if you have three children, you automatically need to, you know, have you at least at 750 if you have three children. And then we could take, you know, play into other factors.
All right. So what I answer, Elijah, is you want to factor in mortgage and children, whether you want those children to go to college. Mm-hmm. Kind of three major driving factors.
Yeah. Well, my thing is, the first thing is the different products. Anything is better than nothing.
Okay.
And the number two is, if you can't afford to pay, don't sign the policy. What I'm saying is, if you get the life insurance, you want to be able to keep it. There's no use in getting it and then 3 months later you can't pay the bill, and then the policy lapses and you have to start over again. The second thing I would say is, I like whole life. That was, you know, term life is better than nothing, but you don't build any cash value, and it also resets after the term, and you get nothing. Now, it's also, it will be the cheapest, I guess. But let's say if you get a 10-year term, and then nothing happens in 10 years.
Can I interrupt?
Yes, sir.
That's actually an upcoming question. So I want you to save your thoughts on that, because one of my questions actually deals with the different types. So I want you to be able to share that, your thoughts on the pros and cons.
Okay.
So
the pros of everybody needs it. And of course, in our community, we're the last to get it. The other community for years have left their heirs money, and that's how they have built their wealth over the years. We are really lacking on that. So with State Farm, we have a life insurance calculator with Elijah kind of touched on. All of them are about the same, where it, you know, it talks about your bills versus how much you owe, how much you want to bill, what's your goals, and all those things. And these things are fluid, so they change as you continue. Now, the main thing is, at the end, I have to say this, when you, the earlier you get it, the cheaper it is. So if you keep it for 50 years, don't miss a payment, because insurance companies are about money. If they got your money for 50 years and you miss a payment, they're looking to cancel you because they've made their money. All those gimmicks, like a good neighbor, those are gimmicks. Insurance company, this is a money game. And if anybody don't understand that, insurance is a money game. And life insurance especially. But as far as the investment in life insurance, if you have family and kids, it's imperative that you get it. So, really, Mitchell?
I have a question. Back to Elijah, when you were talking about aggregating your expenses so that, you know, so you'll have sort of a baseline as to where to start. Do you factor in all of your other potential debt that may be left behind to your beneficiaries when you're considering a life insurance policy?
Yes. So I factor in, when I'm doing the calculation, I factor in the mortgage, I factor in Sorry, we got a lot of feedback for a second. Factor in the mortgage, we factor in the car note, factor in, I actually like to factor in the individual salary over a 5 to 10 year period, because that has to be replaced. You know, how much is that going to be replaced? You know, look at the average cost of the utility bills, entertainment, you know, how much do you actually spend on entertainment, clothing, food? Are the kids in public school or in private school? How much did that cost per year? So when I'm actually looking at the whole picture, right? And I don't want to jump ahead because I feel as though it's gonna like naturally get there. But
Craig, well, you can stop there. I have another question, so you can pause right there so that you can go into further explanation when you get to the appropriate question. But secondly, you mentioned finding the
Clint. Okay.
So you mentioned finding the sweet spot and not over insuring. Mm-hmm. Hypothetically, I would want to leave my beneficiary with more to, you know, more insurance benefit than not, so that once all of the debt is eliminated, that they still have a little cushion. So where do you strike that balance in going over the top and over insuring?
Well, that's when you factor in that person's income. How many years of that person's income do I need to insure? So I'll use myself as an example, right? I have a mortgage. I have 3 children. I'll be 36 tomorrow. So my youngest child is 4 years old. So let's say, you know, God forbid something happened to me today, you know, my wife still has to pay my mortgage. We've been in my house for 6 years. So theoretically there's 24 years left on the mortgage. My youngest child is 4 years old. So let's say if you know, I like to factor in that a child stays home until they're at least 25, because I don't believe in putting children out at 18. Unfortunately, that's, you know, in our culture, we do that. But
no, we don't. Mine's still home. He's
33. Exception to the curve. I left at 17, you know, but and I regret it. I should have stayed home. But, you know, realistically, I have to factor in. You know, I have to factor in making sure that my income is actually insured until all of my children are out of the home. And if that's another 25 to 30 years, then that's where that net, that cushion comes into play. Because my goal is to wipe out all debt. I want you to be debt free. You have to worry about nothing, right? But now at this point, you need to live off of or replace my income unless you decide. Or until you decide to bring someone else in the household, which happens, you end up with blended families in the household that can actually can contribute to the household. So let's say if my income is $120,000 a year, right? I need to replace that over the next 30 years. How much do I need to replace that? And if I'm also going to factor in, all right, once you get this money, are you going to just park it in the savings account that's paying nothing, or are you going to actually move it into something that will actually provide you with a monthly payout to help you replace the income that you lost while I was gone? And that's how I would calculate.
Hey, Scoob, let me jump in on that too. Another thing that you want to look at too is net. So you know, you also have a thing called guaranteed insurability. What that means is you can get the policy, and then at certain times, every 3 years or so, up until age 50, you can add the guaranteed insurability amount. Let's say it's $25,000. Well, you may get sick or during the time. So when that time comes up, if you have the GIO option, you can still add the insurance because you've paid the premium, even if you're sick and you don't qualify. So that's a very important thing for people to look at. But sometimes I just feel like it's really unrealistic to have a like Elijah is saying, if you got a married and you got three kids, then you make $120,000 that you got to get 30 years. That's like $2 or $3 billion worth of insurance, which is could be not cost effective, so to speak. So when you have to look at it, when you go through those calculators, you do net. You know, you understand what I mean? So whatever your budget is, everything is included, minus what you owe, and then the net insurance would be, let's say you owe $400,000, you may need $1 million. Now that's $600,000, and now if you get to $600,000, you have to invest it because that's not $120,000 a year for 30 years. Mm-hmm. So it's not a definite number. You can always recommend. And another thing I will add is if you get in life insurance, don't cancel it for another policy. So let's say if you get $100,000 policy whole life, you're 25. In 5 years, you build it in cash value and somebody brings you a better deal at 30. Well, the insurance is going to be higher because you're older. And so when you do this, you want to put all the little things in place because you can pay premium and have little stuff like to pay if you become disabled, WMD. So that's a waiver of premium. If you're disabled, you can have the guarantee and insurability, like I explained, if you get sick and you can still get the insurance no matter if you don't qualify. So some of these things are very, very important. Instead of just a broad number with none of the attached, options on them.
Options.
Yeah. Now, I'm happy you said that because I actually wasn't suggesting that somebody should get like a $3 million policy. You know, it is very expensive if you get like a $3 million term policy. And then that's not to say somebody can't afford it. But sometimes, you know, we do have to make the you have to calculate it properly, as he's saying, and you got to make sure you're making the right suggestion. And I'm happy you also brought up the fact that you shouldn't be bouncing from one policy to the next, because as you do get older, it gets more expensive. And unfortunately, we in the industry, we see people, they leave one carrier and they go to another carrier, and they may go from, you know, like I said, they go from a Mass Mutual, or they go from a Primerica, and they go to a New York Life, or they go to a Northwestern Mutual. And every time they jump companies, they like to call up their book of business and try to solicit business from their book, you know, from their existing clients. But quite honestly, when some people that are actually doing that, it may not be in the best interest of the client, because if I wrote you a policy 5 years ago and I'm calling you to write you another policy today, the cost is not going to be the same. And if it was a whole life policy, you know, there's a lot of things that play into it, especially if you had a significant amount of cash value, the dividends being paid out, things of that nature. You know, you don't want to start from scratch.
Okay. Yeah, hold on, Scoop. The last thing I would add to that is also, let's say if you're a working guy, I always tell my clients, get everything that your job offers. Yes. Because they're going to pay most of it and you just pay a portion.
Yep.
So a lot of times you can die and you might have $250,000 at the job.
That was free.
So you have to take that. Well, for a nominal fee, but then you can use that. You can minus that out to what you're calculating that somebody needs additional. Yep. I think that's another important.
Okay. Good. I'm glad you added that. And I think maybe for clarification, based off of what both of you said in terms of calculating the amount and actually the policy itself, I think that amount, and again, this is what people will maybe watch this later, is this is the amount that you need. The policy will not give you that amount. You then have to take that payout and do something with it so that you can get close to that amount over the period of time, which is, I think one of you said, you know, you don't really take that money out and spend it. You gotta take that money out and put it into some investment where over the period of time, you can then gain that amount that you need. The other thing that I just want to follow up and address is, Clinton, you said something, and I know that this has been, something that we've dealt with as a culture, And this wasn't really on the list of questions, but being that you raised it, I got to follow up on it. From a cultural perspective, this issue with life insurance. Now, just for disclaimer, I used to be a life insurance agent. And one of the things that, and this was years ago. Actually, probably before you were born, Elijah. Wow. I think about it. Wow. close
wow.
to it.
Wow.
But one of the things that, used to run into is that this line that I don't want to leave anybody anything. I ain't leaving these folks nothing. They're only going to fight over it. And I noticed, again, the difference in culture between leaving something to help the next generation build upon versus not leaving anything. So my question to you, Clint, and Elijah, feel free to follow up. Are you still confronted with that cultural thing? And what are your thoughts on how to change it?
You're up first.
Well, all you can do for me is to present it to everybody. Okay. You try to get it in front of people the best you can. Now, for me, with State Farm, what I do better with is to hire. You're only good at the people you hire. And to hire people and train them properly, because for one person, you can't do everything yourself. So you're only good as your team, as we call it with State Farm. But we do have that problem in our community. It's been generational that we don't leave anything to our heirs. And that's how the other community has built wealth over the year. They've got the insurance, and these their kids are growing up. When their parents die, they get a windfall. And we don't. I'm not saying everybody, but it is a major problem in our community.
Okay. Elijah, anything you want
to add? With me being a part of I would say the up and coming generation, the accumulators at this point. It's just like Clint said, it's still an education, it's based on education, right? I have to now educate my peers and then the individuals that I grew up with on the importance of life insurance. Because to be honest with you, and I actually did a webinar on this on Facebook Live, I'm tired of seeing fish fries and I'm tired of seeing GoFundMe pages pop up for individuals that I knew in the neighborhood that unfortunately passed away, and they didn't have insurance, and they said they have a 2 and 3 year old, son or a daughter that they left behind. So it's a conversation. I actually have a post. You guys may have seen it. Life insurance is cheap. Life insurance can be cheaper than Uber Eats. Because if anybody's done Uber Eats, you go on there. You're like, that meal was only $20. Oh, wait, I'm checking out. That meal was $50. Going back to Clint's conversation, where it's better to have something than better to have nothing. Depending on, the table rating or the health rating that you can get a $500,000 term life insurance, and it may only cost you maybe $30 to $40 a month, for 30 years. It's something better than nothing. It may not be permanent insurance, but again, it's something better than nothing. And it actually is cheaper than Uber Eats. So when I'm having those conversations, I'm also having the conversations with, do you understand that there is something called gift of a lifetime, where you can actually provide your children with life insurance today and they'll have it for the rest of their lives? And honestly, it was like, what do you mean? Like, if you actually put a policy on your children, whether it be $50,000 or $100,000, you can actually, it's a whole life policy, you can actually pay for it for either, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. And when they are of age, whether it be 18, 20, they have permanent life insurance that they don't ever have to pay for. They can purchase more if they want to as they get older, but they have a permanent life insurance policy that they don't have to pay for. And the great thing about it is, because it's a whole life policy, it's still going to build cash value. It's still going to earn a dividend. And it may have started out at maybe $50,000 to $100,000. But when they turn, let's say worst case, God bless them, they end up living to the 60, 70, 80 years old. Who knows what that policy may be worth? It may be worth $500,000 or $1 million by that chance. And it started off at 50. You secure them at birth for their grandchildren.
Wow.
You created generational wealth at birth for the next generation because you started them off early.
Right, that's exactly right. That's why they call it life insurance.
Exactly.
You don't get paid until you're dead.
Right.
But it benefits the living. See, people don't get that. That's why they say they don't want to leave anybody anything. But life insurance only pays out to the death of the insurer, but it's benefiting the living.
Well, we have
the term life insurance.
That's correct. What we have to start doing is making sure that everyone in our community, as many people as possible in our community, have some form of coverage. Because the other thing that life insurance guarantees is that we're no longer selling grandma's home because we can't afford to pay the mortgage on it.
That's right.
Or we can't afford to swing the reverse mortgage that grandma took out in order to pay the property taxes or to live, or because she wasn't getting enough in the pension or Social Security. We see it all too often. And we got to understand, you know, grandma, even though grandma's up in age, even though mom is up in age, you can still get them a guaranteed issued life insurance policy to cover just those incidentals, you know, just the mortgage if necessary. And that, you know, that may not be, it may be something that it could potentially cost maybe $100 to $200 a month. But you got to think about it. How many people are actually in your household? If mom or grandma has 3 children and 15 grandchildren, can y'all actually pull together and come together to take care of this?
Nope.
You know, or are we going to do this? You do it. No, you do it. No, you do it. No, you
right.
do it. No, you
do it. Right.
You do it. You know, generational wealth is built with, and to be honest with you, it's built with life insurance, but it's also built with real estate. They go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. They literally go hand in hand.
You know,
so it's changing the culture, changing the mindset. You got to change a lot. It's reprogramming, educating them from the ground up. I call it the grassroots, because if a tree don't grow from the ground, a tree doesn't grow from up to down. It grows from the roots go down first, the anchor in, and then it goes up. The only thing that starts off in a tree and it grows up and goes down are orchids. They're beautiful, but they're parasites. And one storm blows it right away.
Okay, now that was way over my head, but I get it. that was above my pay grade, Elijah.
Basically saying.
But I get what you're saying. I might use that myself.
Don't make it look like you got it when you don't. Because it takes one hard time for the truth to come to light.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, there was a saying, you know, back when I sold insurance, is that, you know, If you die early, you win, you know?
What? Yeah, if you die early, that's one hell of a saying right there.
That was a reality of the insurance.
I'll lose every day of the week.
You know? let me write that down. If you die, let me win. Yeah,
let me go be a loser. I'll be a loser.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think so.
You guys raised some good point, which kind of, you know, sets up for the next question, which is, you know, again, the insurance cover changes over life. The person becomes a empty nester, huh? Mm-hmm. Say the mortgage is paid, you know, low debt. You know, some people think, well, I don't want life insurance. I don't believe that is correct. What are your thoughts? Somebody, again, nobody's in the house, but say maybe husband, wife, or again, you live alone, nobody's
okay.
Paying your salary.
Let me jump in on that. Let's say, for instance, you're an empty nester, so that means your kids have moved out.
Correct.
All right, so now I would say you never cancel the life insurance because you may have grandkids. Mm-hmm. So now what you want to do is put your will together and put your life insurance in a trust for the grandkids. See, that way you keep paying it, make sure all your debts are paid, and set up a living trust for your grandkids, which is what I am doing right now. Mm. So
great answer. Elijah,
you something to contribute? Yeah, I mean, I would tell them, to be honest with you, you know, even though you may think you no longer need insurance, you may have the assets to cover, you know, final expenses and things of that nature. But unless you have a extremely tight I would say an estate planner, and debate, and also depending on what state you're in, because you know how the state taxes are here in the state of New Jersey. Mm-hmm. You know, unless you have you have the ability, the means, but nobody wants to pay taxes unless you want to have your children pay estate taxes for you. Keep the life insurance and have the life insurance to cover those expenses if necessary. You know, working in the financial services industry, I've seen it all where multimillionaires pass away and their estate or their finances weren't intact. And a good portion of it went to estate taxes. You know, I'm sitting down and I'm looking at the letter of testamentary. Looking at the letter of testamentary, and I go to pull up the accounts for the individual, and there's liens on the accounts. And the lien is from the state. The state put the liens on there because they're kind of trying to calculate how much they have to pay in estate taxes, right?
Right.
So realistically, you can't even access those funds until that whole process is complete. And it could be years because you have to hire a CPA to help you with the process. It could be years down the line before that's even complete. But if you have life insurance, guess what happens when unfortunately you pass away? That check is cut. And
right,
it's cut to whoever you have it left to.
Right. Can you say probate?
Exactly.
Mm, right.
Can you say 2 to 4 years?
That's right. So,
yeah.
So if
go ahead, Mitchell.
Yeah, my question is back to Clint's remark about the living trust for grandchildren, because I do have two, and I've been toiling over how I should adjust my life insurance policies to include them. And I didn't think about insuring their lives, believe it or not, because I just thought that would be overstepping, you know, my boundaries. But certainly good information to take back to my son and his wife, just in case they have not insured them.
But so Mitchell, how old are they?
How old are the babies?
Yes.
One will be 8.
Okay. So with you being a grandmother, you can insure him through your, you can take a policy out on him now. But because I think it's in Georgia, you have to be under 16, a parent or grandparent can take out life insurance without the kid knowing, the parents' consent. Mm-hmm. After 17, that child has to sign, whether it be your child or your grandchild. So that keeps you from saying, you see this homeless man down the street, let's take a life insurance policy out on him because he's not going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't do that. That keeps you from doing that because I'd have life insurance all over the place. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you have to have an insurable interest. In other words, you have to have a vested interest in that person to take out life insurance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're over 16 years of age. But under 16, and also Mitchell, you can take you can change anything on your life insurance that you want to. You're the owner of the policy. You can call the guy up, you can change your beneficiaries, you can change anything how you want it dispersed at any time with a phone call or what they call a request letter, I think it is. So those are the types of things that you need to look at and which should be explained at the time when you take it out. But once you took it out, they don't know you got grandkids. Unless they got a plan to call you maybe once a year, once every 2 years, just to check in to see how your coverage is. But just for knowledge, it's very important. Under 16, you can take out a policy on somebody if you have a parent or a grandparent.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I might just reach out to Elijah, talk about New Jersey laws and what I can do.
Yeah. Well, Darren, what was your question? Because I heard you had.
Yeah. Basically the same thing. I was going to ask for your input as far as New Jersey was concerned.
Okay. Yeah. Jersey's. With the Jersey, in Jersey law, you could actually put a policy on Sadie and Summer, so you wouldn't have to worry about you won't have to worry about, because you actually do have insurable interest. They're you actually own the home that they reside in. But not only that, you can actually put the policy on them to help cover college expenses as well. I don't know if you ever saw the college funding coach class that I actually that I do periodically.
But so that's in addition to the 529s that I have set up for them?
You can do that in addition to 529s because you're setting up, if you set up, you're setting up whole life policies for them now. Those whole life policies are actually going to grow, the cash value portion of it, which if we structure it properly, you'll be able to actually pull money out for college. Now you got to remember 529s, it has to be used for college or technical school, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say if the kids don't decide not to go, you're going to get taxed on it at whatever the tax laws are at that time. With life insurance, if you decide to pull out the cash value on it, you're not going to get taxed. And if they decide they don't want to go to college or they don't want to go to technical school, or let's say, the cookie business or everything they have going on just takes off and they really don't need to, because quite honestly, college and technical school is to learn a trade so you can go off to be entrepreneurs. My kids have their own business. You know, your grandkids have their own businesses already, and my kids are little. If they don't need it, now you're stuck with these 529s that you have to try to liquidate, and you're going to end up being taxes on them.
That's a good point.
That's a good point. Yeah. Good information. Thank you.
Let me say, with me, I have 529. I have six grandkids. Well, five. I have 529s on all of them. And I also have what we call 15 or 20 pay life, as Elijah mentioned earlier. So hopefully I'm going to live long enough to where that 15 or 20 pay life, they're going to be paid up.
Mm-hmm.
And then to set it up in the trust will be to turn that money over to the grandkids. And you have to put it in the trust, because if you don't, you don't know what your kids and stuff are going to do, man.
Nope.
You know, and you know, money gets sticky. Money gets sticky. And you can say you love somebody, but when it's $100,000 there, you don't love them that much. You know, I've seen it over and over again. You know,
how parents are with their kids.
That's right.
The trust prevents the shootout. That's why you turn.
that's right.
You got to go by the instructions of what the trust and the attorney says. It literally levels the playing field for everybody, and it gets that dog face out of here.
That's right.
The dog face. I've seen it working in. I literally saw where I had an uncle passed away. Uncle had no children. House is paid for. Everything is paid for. There was a niece that was helping to take care of him right here in Livingston, New Jersey. And he left everything to another lease that lived out not Oregon. What's that state above in Washington? Washington State. He left everything to this niece in Washington State. It was over $1 million in the house in Livingston. He sold it all and hightailed it back out there.
I bet you they don't get along to this day.
Yeah. They don't talk. They do not talk.
There's no way they talk.
Yeah, they absolutely. Talk.
That was
they don't talk. Because she took care of him, and the other one that was out living on a farm, she actually owned a grass farm. I mean, she sold hay. That's what she lived in. That's what she did for a living. Cost of living extremely low. You know, there's nothing to do out in that part of Washington State where she was. And she'd never have to work another day in her life.
That's horrible. That's
good. Just want to actually get another quick question that wasn't on the list, but based off the conversation, it's made me think about this. If I remember correctly, they said, yeah, your life insurance policy is, again, it's outside of your will and it cannot be contested, whereas the will can be contested. Does that sound about right?
That's about right.
If
you don't update beneficiaries on a policy, yeah, you can have an issue. I actually just ran into an issue like that where a life insurance policy had an ex-girlfriend on it, and the person didn't update the policy. Old policy was actually already paid for. So I guess I'm assuming the husband didn't remember that it even was around. Ex-girlfriend was on a policy. He passed away, and money went to the ex-girlfriend.
Okay.
You think, you think the ex-girlfriend's giving that money to the wife?
Come on.
That's an idea.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. Take that money in.
But that, yeah, that brings up a very good point where you can change your stuff at any time, you know, but people don't do it. So that comes in. So when you take a life insurance application, the company has, there's a 2-year window where, let's say, for instance, if you commit suicide or something like that, within that 2 years, they can just send you back your money.
Yeah.
Because you committed suicide. Yeah. But after two years, they don't find out, all bets is off. You could have had cancer at the outset of the policy. But if they don't find out in 2 years, that's too bad for the insurance company.
Yeah.
As long as, you know, the point is, after 2 years, all bets is off. They got to pay.
Yeah.
Okay.
No matter what.
Yeah. Return a premium. Yeah. Return a premium.
Yeah. Now, going to the next question, this was kind of following what you were going earlier, Clint. What are your thoughts on the different types of policies? Does one serve you better at a different point in your life? But when you look at the universal whole life term, what are your thoughts? And who, you know, Elijah, you want to go first?
Oh, so they have, I mean, yeah. So, you know, they serve different purposes, right? The whole life policy is permanent insurance. Term life policy is temporary insurance. And you got to use the universal whole life. So, you know, to realistically, you can actually, combine policies to meet a goal. It really is based on what's the need of that particular individual. So, you know, it all plays back into that needs-based analysis that you're having with a client. You know, do you have a mortgage? Is the mortgage 30 years? You know, do I just need to ensure, you know, balance? Do you need mortgage insurance? And that's what they call it. If you purchase a term life policy that matches the term of the mortgage, and it's realistically in place, just if God forbid you pass away, the mortgage is paid off. So it really plays into, you know, what the needs are for the individual. So if anyone doesn't know what the difference is, whole life insurance is permanent insurance that you have for your entire life. There are different ways to pay for the policy. It can be paid for in full in 10 years, 20 years, or 30 years, depending on the carrier and the terms that they have. But once you are done paying for it, paying for the policy, you never have to worry about paying for it again, unless you pick a 100-year term where you actually pay for the policy up into for the full 100 years. Each one of those pay scales or pay schedules, or in the insurance industry they call monthly modals, depending on what you actually select, will determine how much the insurance is, per month, if you decide to, you know, swing it that pay for it monthly. Of course, the lower the term for whole life insurance, if you do a 10-year total payoff, that premium payment monthly was actually going to be a little more than if you went for 20, 30, or 100, you know, based on budget. Term life insurance literally is just, it's temporary insurance. It could be for 5 years, 10 years, 20, 15 years, 20 years, 30 years. But once that term is up, you actually have to renew the policy, same way we have to renew our auto insurance. You have to renew the policy for a certain amount of time that you need to insure yourself for. But term life insurance is actually it's cheaper than whole life because it is temporary. And they actually also have a product called an annual renewable term for every year. And that's actually annual renewable term is actually very more similar to auto insurance than anything else, because every year that insurance policy renews and the premium actually increases based on your current health rating. So if you got an annual renewable term at 25, it actually could be dirt cheap. It could be $20 a month for a minimum policy. But an annual renewable term at 35 could end up costing you about $75 to $80 a month, you know, based on, you know, health rating.
That's right. Let me jump in on that term. Mm-hmm. Now, like I say,
anything is better than nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the features in a term policy is that you can convert to whole.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you can't you need this amount of insurance, but you can't afford a whole life policy for that amount. So if you get this, let's say you get a couple $100,000 30-year term, you can fit it, you can pay it. As your income increases on your job, every 5 years you may maybe convert 25 to 50,000 of it to whole life. So you'll have like 50,000 of it will be whole, where you'll be paying, and then the other 150 will still be carrying on the term. And as mm-hmm. your income gets better, before you get too old, you can convert all of that to whole life.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of things out there, but we just have to be aware. And it's not as complicated as people want to make it.
No.
I say this all the time. I've been an agent for a long time. Insurance is boring until payday. Okay. I get excited on the 15th and the 1st.
Yep.
Okay. So, like I say, this is a money game.
The good thing is you have set dates that payments have that is set. You know, that's set in stone.
And it's residual.
Every time.
Yeah.
Every time.
I have a question along the terms of dual policies or types of policies, holding a term policy and a supplemental whole life policy. Are there advantages or disadvantages to that?
It all depends on the goal, to be honest with you. Right. There's no right or wrong answer for it.
And your financial position, what you can pay.
Yeah, because you can buy a whole life policy with a term rider attached to it, and you can buy a whole life policy with a child rider or a term policy with a child rider attached to it as
That's
well.
Right.
Yeah, so it all depends on the goal. You know, if you have a good agent, your agent's going to go through that whole process to make sure that the policy aligns with your financial goal.
So I can amend my policy. I'm sorry, go ahead.
You can amend the policy.
Going back to Mitchell, when mm-hmm. you talk about your grandkids, you can add the CTR, the children term rider, to your policy. And it insures them.
After
so therefore, that would be a problem, I guess. That would be a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the point is,
I would have to take out a new policy.
Yes.
The point being is, at the outset, if you'd have known these things, you could have added them and have a low coverage on them. You know, and it's just be one policy, and the term rider is just a rider, just like the guaranteed insurability or the disability feature.
Yeah, Clint, you got me excited for a second. I thought you knew a carrier that was doing that I didn't know of, because I was going to definitely pick your brain on that one.
Well, I know that's right. Bad info.
I thought, like, wait a minute, what do you have? I need this unicorn. I need it. Where is it?
You caught it because I need to call tomorrow. Like, then I was told I couldn't. Yeah.
Been doing this a long time, man. Then, you know, we're not gonna go there. We're not gonna go there.
Can you imagine the argument? Yeah. Somebody calling like, he said, I want the guy from Atlanta. He said, like,
yeah.
I'm talking about.
I want the State Farm guy because he said.
Yeah, because you.
I just have one more question.
If my three Georgia people are on, we might work something out.
Hey, Clint.
Go ahead. There was another question.
Yeah, I have a question for you, Clint. Do you know Andre Gilliard? He's a State Farm agent in Georgia.
Andre who?
Andre Gilliard.
Gilliard. That name does really sound familiar. How old is he?
He owns a State Farm agency in Georgia. I don't know if it's Atlanta, but it's close.
Yeah, the name sounds familiar, but I tell you, a lot of these newer guys, they may know of me because I've been around so long. And I can just remember the time when it was me. I'm now considered old school. So Andre Gilliard, the name sounds familiar. That was a young man a couple of years ago that they put on as an agent. So now what they're putting these guys on to do is just have call centers. You know, you rent a space, you might have 15 people, you buy leads, and you just produce. They're doing 200 and 300 apps a month, but they're setting them up to fail as far as compliance. You know, life insurance is a heavily regulated industry.
Mm-hmm.
So they teach these guys to do stuff, and then when they do it too much, they fire them. So you have to be real careful with stuff like that. With me, I'm not trading my what I've worked for one or two little compliance things, because you know they're looking at us. They slap the other people on the wrist and they fire up.
Oh yeah, that's true. But no, he's been in business for about 15 years, and it's not State Farm. He's Allstate.
Okay.
He's Allstate.
Well, that name, I have heard the name before, and I know a few Allstate guys, but I can't really say.
He's in Atlanta. He's out of Atlanta.
He is in Atlanta.
Gilliard.
Yeah,
he's in Atlanta.
All right, we're going to shift because we're kind of running short on time. And so I just want to get this in here first. Would you guys mind coming back? Because I had a lot more questions.
Oh, yeah.
Conversation's good. some of the stuff that you share, I kind of wish I had known, back in the days of me selling. I'm really, disappointed that my friend Clinton, who I've known for 40 years, never told me one thing, shared one bit of information.
You're going to have to go back in the cut, man. Put it back in the cut. You don't want to relive those days, too.
No. I like the knowledge that you guys are sharing. So I definitely will put the request out there to come back so we can continue. But with time we have left, I'm going to say, is there any quick tips you would give somebody on, say, saving money on their insurance premiums? Is there anything that you might recommend? And no is a good answer.
Stay healthy.
Saving money, discount, saving money, those are words, man. You know, if you look at the commercial, Progressive, I think does a great job, but every one of the commercials promotes their insurance as the cheapest. Everybody does, you know what I'm saying? So when you, it's always, everybody wants to pay less until they have a claim.
Right.
Then when they have a claim, they got the most expensive stuff in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they buy an insurance just based on what's the cheapest.
Yep.
And also too, in our community, a lot of people, they buy for the price and not the value. The least expensive is not always the best value. So when you talk about value and understanding what you I think a lot of times, I've been in business so long, a lot of people, when they do have a claim, especially auto, home, that's the best time, if they have a good claims experience, that's the best time to sell themselves, because now they're more understanding of the process. So, like you have a claim, your house is burned down, everything goes relatively smoothly. And then after that happens, you call them up and you say, well, how did the claim go? Everything went well. Well, what would you do that the car was total? Well, suppose that would have been you that died. Now mm-hmm. you're talking to them about life insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So those are just some of the things. So even with that, it's on the insurance company side, and the consumer side, it's a money game. And people are going to learn at their own, the way they learn. You can't force them, you know, but the best thing is if you can keep it inside their budget, so you don't have to call them every week. So Elijah knows this. You have people that every, so in the morning you'll have a call out, late payments and all that. A lot of times the same people go be the late paid every time. And you get to call them all the time. Then usually they have a wreck or a claim right after the payment is due. And sometimes it, you know, the insurance companies ain't playing. I didn't know it's not a good answer.
Right.
You know, because you know they billing you every month. We calling you every month. Okay, can I still get this covered? Or I have a rate. Can I pay it now? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, that goes right back to what we talk about, people not getting the life insurance. Everybody wants to get kind of like a subdivision where you got crime. And then don't nobody want to be snitches. That's our community. Not snitch until your house broke into. Now you want everybody to snitch.
You want everybody to
snitch. Yeah. Yeah, you want everybody to come home then when it's you. So, you know, yeah, but it's true. With that's a major problem in our community.
Yes.
You know, yeah. Don't nobody care until they stuff broken into. Now everybody needs to care because my stuff broken into.
I know we were talking a lot about life insurance, and but I have a question. What happens if you overinsure your home?
Well, good question. You really can't do that. You can't because with State Farm, it's called IV. That's a good question, Mitchell. So insurance companies want to insure your house based on their calculation of what it will cost to rebuild if it burns down. Not what you bought it for, not what you can sell it for. They're going to insure, they're going to plug in the square footage, the construction type, two-story, ranch, basement, all that, and then they come up with a figure based on their calculation that they're going to charge you what it would cost to rebuild the house if it burns to the ground. That has nothing to do with what you pay for it or what you can sell it for. Because the insurance companies don't insure land, they only insure the house.
Right.
So your land is not insured. I've seen houses, sell for $80,000. What happens what?
What happens if you do find yourself in a situation where you do have more insurance coverage? Because like you said, the insurance company only wants to pay for the dwelling.
Right. And that's what they want. When you take out, when you call in to get make an application for a homeowner's insurance, they're going to ask you a list of questions. How much stuff you got? What's the square footage? Is it brick? Is it wood? What's the zip code? Then you hit the button and it says we need to insure your house for $200,000. So now with State Farm, you can insure your house for $150,000, but you're not gonna get the replacement cost benefit. They're gonna be actual cash value because you're not insuring your house to replace it. You're just insuring your house just in case, which is what insurance is for. It's really a just in case thing. So You want to answer the question, and what happens is in the state of Georgia, it's called a valued policy state. What that means is if your house burns to the ground, they have to pay you the policy limit. I don't care if you overinsure and it only costs them $150,000 to replace it and it's a total loss, they have to pay you the $200,000 in the state of Georgia because that's what they insured it for and it's a total loss. Now, any other way, they're only going to repair or replace what's damaged. So I don't know if that kind of answers your question. But
it does. I was hoping to hear they refund my premium.
No.
I knew I wasn't going to. I said I'm hoping.
No. In Jersey, they actually just replace the home. They give you what the actual cash value is for the home. So,
You mean if you don't have it insured 100%?
No, you have it insured. If you don't have it insured 100%, then you SOL.
you gotta fill the gap, huh?
Yeah, that's on you to fill that gap. I hope you got that credit. because you're gonna have to ask for, you know, if you don't got the cash, you gotta get a loan to come up with the difference. But, you know, if you over in Jersey, you know, you over insure your home, they're only gonna, the insurance company, insurance is indemnification. I just gotta make you whole. I just need to make you whole. So if you, you know, fortunately, if you do decide to over insure your home and you overpay that premium, you're overpaying for the actual value, then you're not, it's just a waste of money and not going to give it back to you.
Let me say this, Elijah. You say, when I say actual cash value, for me, that's replacement minus depreciation.
Mm-hmm.
Actual, so replacement cost, in the state of Georgia, we have what we call an option ID, option indemnify. So it mm-hmm. used to be, if I insured your house for $200,000, we had a thing called guarantee replacement, which meant if it costs $250, the guarantee mm-hmm. replacement says they're gonna pay the $250.
Yeah.
They changed that a few years ago. So if I insure your house for $200,000 now, with the option ID, they'll do an extra, just in case they were low, they will give you an extra 20%.
Yeah.
So you actually insure for $240,000.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, to go to the question that the young lady asked, if you are overinsured, you want to make sure you talk to your agent and say, what is 100% replacement based on your calculations?
Mm-hmm.
If it's $200,000, you don't want to be at $250. The agent is not going to call you back and say, well, we overinsured you. That's not going to happen because you are insuring your house. I tell people this all the time, that State Farm insures your house, but it's still your house.
Mm-hmm.
And we have another thing in our community is when we have a claim that people call me and the State Farm comes out, they're thinking State Farm is going to be like the commercial. They're going to do everything and, you know, tell you everything that you don't know. Well, we know, Elijah, you know this, 70% of the people hadn't read the policy anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So when the adjuster comes out, he can tell you anything because you ain't read. that's what they do. I mean, you know, homeowners insurance is built on, let's say, for instance, theft is covered, but you're not buying insurance for theft. You're buying insurance for the hailstorm or the tree falling to your roof. Sudden and accidental. If it's long-term, mold, anything that happens sudden and accidental is probably covered because the dwelling is all risk. What that means mm-hmm. is everything is covered except for what they say is not.
Mm-hmm.
Let me say that again. All risk policy on the dwelling, coverage A, with State Farm. Everything is covered under the sun except for what they exclude. And believe me, they know what they're doing.
Yep.
So if it's long term, if it's poor workmanship, those things are excluded. But if that tree falls through your roof, that's what the insurance is basically there for. Mm-hmm. Or the hailstorm to replace your roof. You know.
Yep.
But you know, we like to turn in my TV was stolen. To turn the claim in. You know, you got $1,000 deductible, your TV $1,200, you better get $200.
$200 check. It ain't worth the claim.
And a 3-year surcharge because you had a claim.
Yeah, it ain't worth the claim. I'll talk people out of file claims all the time. Yeah.
Like I said, looking at the time, I was going to move to the next topic, but actually, I'm going to hold off because I like the way it's flowing. Mm-hmm. And I think if we need another, you know, session just dedicated really to each type of insurance.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is I'm going to check with you guys and set up a follow-up where we'll talk about auto insurance and possibly home insurance. And if we got to separate those into two separate, then that's what we'll do. But I just want to check, are there any closing remarks or tips regarding life insurance from Clint or Elijah?
Well, my tip to anyone is the insurance company works for you. You don't work for them. So therefore, if you're spending your money, you owe it to yourself to find out what you're covered for. I really can't sit there and go over everything with you. Because people look at you and you explain it to them. And I say, do you understand? If somebody looking at me with their eyebrows way up, they don't have a clue about what I'm talking about. But you know how we do. We don't want to be like we're stupid. The last thing I would say is the dumbest question is the one you don't ask. Because yep. you're dealing with your future and your home. And you're paying the money. Mm-hmm. And you don't ask the question because you don't want to feel stupid, then you might lose out.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, honestly, I have to agree with him 100%. You know, if you don't know, you know, ask. And I can honestly tell you, you know, you might hear me say the word Primerica every now and then when it comes to life insurance, because those guys, are I call them the culture vultures. They're out there and they're selling that culture nonsense. It does have a space, and there is a market for those type of policies, but realistically, I've had many people tell me they have a whole life policy, they want a whole life policy, and when I get the policy and they tell me, oh, it's from this carrier, I'm going, it's not whole life. I know for a fact it's not whole life, because it is they don't issue whole life policies.
Wow.
Yeah, so you know, do your due diligence. You know, read. Take that extra 5, 10, 30 minutes that you were going to spend on Facebook or Instagram anyway, and just read the policy. Because unfortunately, you can waste years of months, years of premium that you could have actually applied to something that you applied to a policy that was actually going to work for you. And that was actually a benefit for you. Yeah. So read. And I say it again, I have replaced plenty of policies where somebody had a term policy and they would swear, this is whole life. I know it's whole life. I swear up and down, it's whole life insurance. And I'm going for that price. And with that company and my 14 years experience. Yeah.
Right.
That is not a whole life policy. And they swear every now and full life. And when I finally get that policy premium in front of me, or they pull it up on the computer and I see, look at that PDF file in front of me. You see this word right there on that screen? You see the expiration date right there on that screen? I apologize. I'm going to apologize for the other individual's mistake. But you don't have what you think you have. So do your due diligence. And also, the most important way and the most important thing you can do in order to save money on life insurance is two things. You buy it early and you stay healthy. The younger you are when you buy your life insurance, the cheaper it is. The healthier you are when you buy life insurance, the cheaper it is.
All right. Great session. I just want to check with Mitchell or Shelley. Do you have any questions for Clint or Elijah? Or are you guys good for now?
They were very good, very thorough.
Mitchell?
Was Shelley done? I'm sorry.
She's good.
One last question for Elijah.
Yes, they were very thorough. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there a waiting period for the adding the children or taking a policy with the child rider? Is there a waiting period?
I think it's 2 weeks.
It becomes effective.
No. As long as you have, if you buy a policy on a child, I believe you have to just wait 2 weeks. Because we just have to have the birth certificate and social security number for the child. So once we get the birth certificate or social security number for the child, then we can actually write the policy. Yeah.
Are they issuing Social Security number.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It comes in the mail. The hospital actually files for you. Yeah, I know previous back in the day they used to issue the Social Security number when you first got your first job.
Yeah. Yeah, that was back in the day.
Well,
yes, you had to go apply for it in order to get the job.
It's issued at birth. Yeah,
that's what I thought.
Okay. You got to go to the city where the certificate is going to be issued at, and pick up the birth certificate. But the Social Security card typically comes in the mail.
Okay, I couldn't remember with my daughter. Okay. All right. Oh yeah. Yeah, things have changed. Okay. Thank you, both Clint and Elijah for sharing your knowledge. It was actually a great session.
You're welcome.
Yep. Mitchell and Shelley, thank you for coming in. Your questions were pretty much, on point and helped with the conversation flow. So much appreciated. And we will do it again, and we'll focus on auto, or I'm gonna ask you guys, you want to do auto or home next?
Well, property is, you do both.
Yeah, okay.
Property is property.
All right. Yeah. Well, we're gonna do
auto, home, and auto. No, that's a whole nother animal. You know, that's a whole nother segment in itself. And I think we might want to
break it up as far as he does commercial.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I do a lot of commercial, but State Farm doesn't do everything. So
yeah,
they want to break it up to personal and commercial, but it's still auto, right. It's still property.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll be in touch with you guys, and we'll lay it out and get you back on the schedule, and we'll have another discussion. Again, this was great. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a plan.
All right.
Appreciate you, Scoop.
All right.
Moving on to the
nice
next
meeting
call.
You, gentlemen.
Nice meeting you, gentlemen.
Same here.
All right. Have a good evening.
Bye
bye. You too. Bye now.
Come on. I'm the last one.